It's Wednesday, April 5th, 1989. This is Hearing Room C, the Senate Labor Committee.
When they really brought, I think I'd send a net in there to find you.
Well, no guts, no glory.
Search and destroy.
Boom. We'll go ahead and start. The Senate Labor Committee, we seem to have lost Senator Cease. I know. If she was in the room, I thought I'd take her testimony.
Oh. She's
well, then to heck with her.
Go get her.
No. We'll go ahead and take it in order, and then we'll get it when she returns. Okay? Then you, no problem. 518. We're going to start on that, and we want to hear from Joe Gilliam. You want to come up and tell us about it?
Sir. Thank you. Chairman, members of the committee, we're here. I want to test. My name is Joe Gilliam, representing National Federation of Independent Business, 14,000 small businesses in the state. Wanted to be on record with you on Senate Bill 518, which is before you today. NFIB Oregon opposes Senate Bill 518. Our opposition to the bill has nothing to do with whether or not a pregnant mother should be able to switch from to a less hazardous job when she becomes pregnant. If it is available, I believe this type of move would be appropriate. What we do oppose in the bill is the whole idea of putting another mandate on business, directing private business policy, and in the course, making business bear the cost of employees who have chosen to become pregnant. The whole issue.
Oh, Mr.
sure.
Gilliam. Thank you, Brenda. I appreciate that. Can we? I am having a little difficulty hearing the witness, so if the other conversations are being held in the room, either hold them down or hold them outside. Thank you, Mr. Gilliam.
Thank you. The business people I represent are not insensitive to the needs of an expectant woman, nor do they wish to punish or discriminate against them. The hard economic factors, however, must be considered if we are to allow small business to expand and increase the opportunity of new jobs. The entering and exiting of the labor market by the workforce is a natural element in the flow of our economy. People leave their jobs for many reasons. Their spouses transfer, they go back to school, they start their own business, and pregnancy is just another one of the elements why people exit and enter the workforce at different times. We believe by artificially adding an artificial factor to the natural reaction of these events in our economy, it's going to take away the opportunity for other people to have jobs and to gain stable employment. It really messes up the natural flow of the workforce. We've polled our members on a related subject in parental leave to find out what the consequence would be if they required to offer 12 weeks of leave and reinstatement for parents of newborns. The question was, should the current state parental leave law apply to all employers, regardless of the number of employees? 7% said yes, 90% said no, and 3% were undecided. We then asked, if you answered no to question 9, which was question 9 on the ballot, indicate the reason why. 30% said it could not find a replacement that would take the position temporarily and cannot operate with the vacancy for a period of 12 weeks. 27% could not afford to add a replacement and provide benefits for both the replacement and the new employee. 26% said they could not find a temporary replacement with appropriate skills that could fill the job. And that's a real problem that's growing, seems to be expanding. And 14% could not afford to reinstate an employee and lay off a replacement, i.e. the training process, the supervisory process, and then also unemployment benefits and such that go along with the layoff of an employee. The Parental Leave Act of 87 took small business into consideration and exempted small businesses. I'm not asking you to punish a pregnant mother by making her work an unsafe job. I realize that's one of the issues at the top of this bill, and we're not at all against that. But we urge your opposition on the base that employers cannot continue to offer new jobs and training to people while at the same time required to initiate reinstatement policies. The effect of this in small business is just they can't just afford, and they don't have the resources to comply with such a request.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schumacher.
So what would you propose to do when the pregnant employee asks if she she can have temporary leave?
I would leave it up between the employer and the employee.
Well,
and if the employer can promise to bring her back on, then that's fine.
But if he can't, if he's in the position that you say that 90% of your people are, what happens? He just either keeps working or leaves the job? Is
he would have to choice? He would have to hire somebody
permanently. She loses her job.
She'd have to make that decision. It's the only way the small business can run and without promising reinstatement. They just don't have the ability or the flexibility to do that. There's usually not that many positions open to say, if you come back, we can put you in this division or that division. Because most of the businesses we're talking about are single division, if you will, places. They just don't have that kind of flexibility. And while I sympathize with the problem of this, I don't know that it's the responsibility of the small businessman for the pregnancy of that employee. It's a natural event, and those are sometimes the consequences we have in life. Whether you if you return to school, you're not going to have your job promised back to you after you finish college, or whatever. But.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Did we have anybody else we had left out of the hearing on the other day? Okay, we ready to go to work session then, Mr. Hill?
Yes, we have the
You ready? Okay, we'll close the hearing on 518 and we will go into the work session on the bill. I have an undated hand engrossed bill. Is that what we're working from?
The only one, uh-huh.
Okay, so it comes on top and that reflects more than one amendment.
It reflects the amendments that the subcommittee worked on, and then you should have an additional 518-3 dated the 30th of March, which reflects the policy statement that was worked up subsequent to the subcommittee hearing.
Okay, so that what's under consideration is the undated hand engrossed version of the bill plus -3 amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Hill, you want to take us through the bill? Now, let me ask you. I've read over the hand-engrossed version and the policy statement. The question is, did the committee earlier, when I was sick, I missed Monday's meeting, did we go through it?
No.
Okay. All right. Take us through it.
Mr.
Quickly.
Chairman, the subcommittee met once. You assigned a subcommittee to this bill. And Senator Shoemaker, Senator Grinsky, and myself, we met once, and in a very brief time, we did examine the major questions that were raised at the first hearing. And this language is a result of the concepts that were brought forward at the committee and seemed to represent the consensus of the committee.
That was the question. Were they agreed to by the subcommittee?
There was not formal action on this language because it hadn't been drafted at that point, so we don't have a formal set of amendments. But this does represent what appeared to me to be the consensus, and the other members of the subcommittee expressed that it seemed to be okay. So,
right.
With that qualifier, that's fine what we have before us.
Okay, because I read it over and it's fine with me.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I'll mention the high points. In the Hand and Gross 518 version, we provide new language that states the leave is not required to be granted with pay unless specified by agreement of the employer and employee by collective bargaining agreement or by employer policy. The employee shall be entitled to utilize any accrued vacation leave, sick leave, or other compensatory leave during the leave of absence unless otherwise specified by agreement of the employer and employee by collective bargaining or by employer policy. So it puts the collective bargaining agreement or the agreement with the employer or employer policy in the driver's seat in terms of the use of the compensated leave. We also provide some additional changes down on line 22. If the employer doubts that the leave of absence is reasonably necessary, the employer may request a medical opinion. We add language on the second page that provides that the regular employment position of the employee who has temporarily transferred or is on leave of absence under this section shall only be considered vacant for the period of time transfer, for the period of the temporary transfer or the leave of absence, and the employee shall not be subject to removal or discharge from such position as a consequence of exercising the rights under this act. It clarifies that it's not to be considered vacant beyond the leave of absence necessary for the act. It's only for the purposes of the act. You can't tack on a vacation at the end of your leave. That's the same as the parental leave law. It makes clear that the position will be considered to be available when the person comes back. The other amendment is the policy statement that the Women's Rights Coalition was suggesting in our first hearing. This language, I think, is far more acceptable to the committee than the original language we had. It reads, it would be a new section 2, and the other sections would be renumbered appropriately. The Legislative Assembly finds that female employees are at risk of disabling pregnancy-related conditions not affecting male employees. It is declared to be public policy of Oregon that employers' policies should accommodate pregnancy-related conditions as provided in this 1989 Act to remove barriers that have operated in the past to favor an identifiable group of employees over other employees who are at risk of disabling pregnancy-related conditions. The Legislative Assembly finds these employer policies will provide female employees with equal job opportunity. The Legislative Assembly does not intend to provide preferential treatment to these female employees. Sub 2, the Legislative Assembly declares that this act is not intended to interfere with the right of the female employee to make decisions in consultation with her doctor regarding her pregnancy. Sub 3, the state's interest is in protecting a female employee's right to make decisions regarding her pregnancy and preventing retaliation for exercising her rights under this act. And then it renumbers the sections. This clearly states the intent of the legislature, and the intent is clearly not to interfere with pregnancy or interfere with a woman's right about pregnancy, but rather to protect her right to equal opportunity to employment, despite being subject to the unique disabling conditions related to pregnancy, which some other classes of employees, notably males, are not subject to. So we're removing a barrier to employment.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I've moved these amendments.
That's the
Hannah-Grossman.
The Hannah-Grossman version and the Dash 3 amendment.
That's correct. I've moved them together.
Okay. Questions or comments from the committee on the motion? Is there objection to the adoption of the amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Hill, I assume you have a motion.
Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Bill 518 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill moves Senate Bill 518 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that be engrossed. Questions or comments from the committee?
I have one question I want to explore a little bit. Relative to Mr. Gilliam's comments, I think that probably in most circumstances, finding a temporary employee would not be an overburdening challenge. Most jobs are not so specialized that you can't find somebody given a little bit of time to fill it on a temporary basis. However, some jobs are. There are some in which it is highly specialized. There's a great deal of experience that goes into it. And what would a small employer do in that circumstance? Anybody figure that out?
You want me to answer that?
I think they can't discriminate against hiring of a woman because she might become pregnant and therefore
That's right.
take advantage of this. You can't That's do that right. or you'd be discriminating under the discrimination statute.
That's right.
So you can't protect yourself there, and then you get in a situation, and she does, and it is a very sensitive job. What do you do?
One of the things that we heard when we went through the parental leave, very much the same kinds of things went through the parental leave issue, and we heard many of the same arguments. What we talked about then was the fact that the pregnancy as a general rule did not come as a surprise to parents. It may on occasion come as a surprise to people, but after they get over the shock of that, they realize that there's a 9-month gestation period they're dealing with, and they are somewhere into that. and they've got to plan accordingly. So it's not like you're coming to the boss on Friday morning and saying, "Boss, on Monday morning I won't be there as your," and then pick a highly technical or scientific specialty, which is the linchpin of this small business, and I'm going to leave you high and dry. It's, "Boss, I'm having a problem with the substances being used in the laboratory where I am your key scientific person. I believe my doctor says I've got a problem with it. If you want to send me another doctor and pay the freight, your doctor may tell you differently, but in either case, I can decide that I don't want to be in that circumstance. You don't have another job for me to do, so I'm out of here. And here's when I'm going to go, and here's what I can do. And what can we do to work with each other to get this to get worked out?"
We don't have anything in here that requires the employee in that circumstance to give reasonable notice.
Showing up at work would probably do it.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you know she's pregnant, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you know she's going to have to pull out.
Well, if a woman starts is 7 weeks pregnant or 9 weeks pregnant, starts spotting, which is a sign of possible miscarriage.
Well, but,
I mean, you can't predict that. You don't know. In other words, a disability may not be predictable, and we have to take that into account in what we're trying to do here. But she shouldn't be fired for taking a number of days off.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there's some way to protect the employer by requiring some reasonable advance notice of the need for a leave of absence.
What did we do in the parental leave reasonable notice when we went through that argument?
Well, with parental leave, we said you need to give notice unless you couldn't.
Well, let's get counsel to give us that statute. Yeah. Why don't we take a look? You want to look at that statute?
Sure.
Why don't we do that?
That might be a way to do that, because it does seem to me we should put some burden on the employee to request this leave as soon as
Ms. Teller, can you find the parental leave statute? You've got it there? Okay. Let's take a look and see what we said about reasonable notice when we did that. We might be able to just, I agree with you, but when it's possible to give reasonable notice, I think we ought to do that. And we ought to put some of the burden on the employee.
30 days.
Mm-hmm. Let me read this. Let me see what the statute says. It's sub 4, 659-360, sub 4. The employer may require an employee to give the employer written notice at least 30 days in advance of the anticipated date of delivery. Okay, both parents shall adhere to the date stated in the notice unless, A, the birth is premature, the mother is incapacitated due to birth, she's unable to care for the child, and some other stuff. But primarily it's 30 days. We could simply say the employer may require an employee to give the employer written notice at least 30 days in advance of the anticipated date of a leave unless circumstances prevent that from occurring. Where's that effect?
How about just the standard of reasonableness?
That's fine with me.
So
we all know what that means.
Well, at least it gives the employer access to some tribunal to decide if he really thinks he's being, treated unfairly. Section 2, we could say, it is an unlawful employment practice for an employer, upon reasonable notice from the employee to the employer to refuse to allow a female employee to transfer temporarily or take a leave of absence. So that at least you have a standard of reasonableness in there. That would then depend on the circumstances of the case. If your employer's in trouble, you'd go to ERB. Was that where you'd go with that?
Well,
where would you go with that?
You would go to BOLI for civil rights enforcement.
Okay.
But the thing that's different between this and the parental leave law is parental leave law isn't a disability, and this is. This is just like being hit by a car or catching pneumonia or breaking.
No, body. I understand that, but it's also something that's coming.
Well, you don't know that the disability is coming.
If you have a disability that hits you quickly, then the reasonableness might be immediate. because you don't know, and you weren't expecting to take time off, all of a sudden you have to.
Exactly.
If it's different from that, and you just simply want, you know, you want to have time off to have your child, and
then you come under the parental leave law.
You're not allowed time off to have your child under this this law.
Right.
You're only allowed to have disability leave, and not only, and that's already, an employer already cannot discriminate against you for being disabled. But you're not, he's not supposed to discriminate against you unless he discriminates against everybody. So if he fires everybody who's disabled, or he has a policy providing no guarantee for anybody who's disabled, he can fire them. What we're saying is that for people who are disabled due to pregnancy-related conditions,
wait a minute, but the pregnancy
they can't be
itself
fired.
Is a disability, isn't it?
Only if a doctor says that something affecting something related to the pregnancy is disabling.
Right.
Including exposure to a toxic substance or a work activity that may endanger the mother, or the mother feels would endanger her.
Where does it say that? Maybe I missed something. Went wrong in this thing. It says it's an unlawful employment practice for an employer to refuse to allow a female employee affected by pregnancy to either transfer to a less strenuous job if that can be accommodated, or take a leave of absence on account of the pregnancy.
Right.
Say I'm pregnant. I want leave of absence.
Right, and then the employer may request a medical opinion.
That what, she's pregnant?
No, that it's reasonably necessary, that the transfer is reasonably necessary. See on line 9, that the transfer is reasonably necessary.
The employer may request
a medical opinion. If the medical opinion says the transfer is not reasonably necessary, the law doesn't trigger.
If the transfer cannot be reasonably accommodated, the employee shall be offered a leave of absence for the duration of the pregnancy.
Yeah, but the operative word.
Here's what happens. The employee goes to the employer and says, I'd like to transfer from the cut line over to a sitting job because of my pregnancy. And the employer says, I doubt that transfer is reasonably necessary. And then it's up to, then the employer may request a medical opinion, or the employee may present personal physician recommendations for transfer. If there's no medical opinion for transfer that is reasonably necessary, then there's no protections. They don't have the right to transfer. And the same thing for the time off.
The operative words are, on line 6, affected by. Mm-hmm. Not the condition of, but affected by. Okay. Pregnancy, childbirth, and related medical conditions or occurrences. That is to say, there is an outcome from the pregnancy that affects the work. You are affected by. Okay?
Yeah,
and that's
I think
the,
you're right.
See,
it
that's
ties,
the operative word.
It all ties into the need for transfer. If you can't do that, you let her go. Okay.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it is a maternity leave situation.
Exactly. And that separates the disability, a pregnancy disability, from parental leave.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are two classes. But there's nothing wrong with, in my opinion, your reasonable notice language, because we all understand what that is. If the reasonable test is met by a woman going to the doctor saying, you know, here's your condition is A, B, and C, your work requires you to do thus, thus, and thus, I'm going to restrict you from doing the second and third part of your job after this period of time, and I want you to tell your employer that because it will have an impact on your pregnancy due to these facts.
Mm-hmm.
The employee then goes to the employer and says, boss, after the 12th week or the 16th week, I'm not going to be able to do this and this according to my doctor. That would be reasonable. The same would occur if the doctor says, hey, you're not doing well, and starting tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
Same reasonable test applies, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think that's what we mean.
If in your first hypothesis, she doesn't have the nerve to go confront her employer with the thing and lets time slip away.
Too bad.
Too bad.
Should have known.
Yeah. Okay, well then could I...
Do you have any objection to that, Senator Hill?
Well,
as long as we understand that reasonable means... reasonable as defined by the circumstances in relationship between the woman who is pregnant and her attending physician.
This is for the reasonable notice.
Yeah, about being able to give reasonable notice about a condition.
Yeah,
might...
there, as long as we understand that in most cases, reasonable notice may be a matter of just hours.
Or
I mean,
days,
that's
hours
reasonable
a day.
Notice.
Yeah.
So the 30-day guide is...
Well, we're not going to use that.
We're not going to use that, so
no.
It's going to be reasonable.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Talbot, why don't you jump in there? You're fine.
May I suggest that instead of putting it up at the beginning, that you actually add a separate subsection like they do in the parental leave law? So I think it would be clearer if you sort of mirrored this language, that something to effect the employer may require an employee to give the employer written notice within a reasonable period of time in advance of the date at which he is going to need to take a transfer or a leave of absence. And that way it's a little bit clearer than just inserting
fine.
Those
that's,
three words.
That's fine.
Okay.
I agree with you.
Can we leave counsel to give
your
language
I'll review
to that?
It.
Okay. Then is there objection to the further amendment of the
amended bill?
Of the amended bill. Any objection, Senator Hill, to the
no.
reasonableness? Okay, we're going to let counsel draft a subsection providing that. Okay? We now have the motion back before us. Any other comments or questions? Almost made it the last time. Okay, let's call a roll.
Before we do.
Oh! Yeah.
I have had a hard time with this bill. As you can see, I sponsored it. The more I think about it, the less I like it.
Okay.
And I want to tell everyone why. This is a difficult thing, and I felt the equities in favor of the unborn child outweighed the other considerations, and I still believe that that is the primary reason that this bill should be enacted, if it is. But I am convinced that it would be the rare employer that wouldn't take that into consideration. I am concerned that we are giving something here that maybe we shouldn't be, and that is that we're overlooking the fact that pregnancy is a voluntary decision that is made generally. I'm not sure that that's a decision that should have an adverse impact on an employer. He didn't have anything, you know, he or she had nothing to do with that decision. My experience in the workplace is that most employers will try to accommodate that. But I am very concerned about one particular thing. In the real world, if a female employee says she's pregnant and goes to the doctor for a medical opinion on transfer and says the least bit of concern to that doctor, I don't think there's a doctor in the world who isn't going to advise her to transfer, because that doctor has nothing to lose. On the other hand, if he says, no, stay there, you can take it, he's risking a malpractice suit if anything happens to her or the baby. So I just think that as a practical matter, a medical opinion could almost always be found to allow a transfer or for a leave of absence. And I think that we're opening up a can of worms where maybe there isn't a problem, at least enough of a problem that we need to mandate this for the many, many businesses who have to deal with this in the real world. So, having said that, the bill as it stands, to me, is just too broad. And unless the committee would be amenable to amending the bill to eliminate the leave of absence language and the right to reinstatement, then I would have to vote against it. Is there any popular support for that?
What? I think that'd be a no.
I kind of figured that when I at least gave you the benefit of the doubt.
Okay. Well, let me suggest another, and I'm not thinking about this committee so much as I am about the floor.
Okay.
On line 10, 9, 10, and 11, it says the employer may request a medical opinion at the employer's cost about the necessity of this. Then it says, however, if the employee's personal physician recommends transfer, that opinion shall be determinative.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm wondering if Mr. Gremsky and other members of the committee would feel about deleting that paragraph, giving the determination to the employee's physician.
No. I think that would be a no. What do you think, Senator Hill?
Well, we'd end up in the adversarial process of dueling medical experts, just like we are on workers' compensation. Frankly, I'd rather give the benefit of the doubt to the woman.
Same here.
I don't think lawyers need to work.
And I see that it may make us vulnerable to ultimate passage, but...
Let's give it a try.
Mr. Chairman, before we move to a vote, I think that the controlling factor against abuse is that most people can't afford to take time off work just for fun. They can't afford to do it, especially if they know they're going to be off anyway for the delivery. They don't have the money. They can't afford it. So most cases of abuse you may be fearing simply aren't going to occur because people can't pay the bills when they're off work. And that's going to force people to stay on work even when they should be off on a disability, I fear. The economic forces.
I think that's true. And that's a concern that has troubled me about this too, as I know the realities of the real world are. People are working maybe when they shouldn't be because of the financial thing. And of course, we're not even addressing that. That's a whole other issue, which doesn't help me at all.
Mr. Chairman, I think...
Take it unless you really got to have it.
I'm not ready to propose paid leaves of absence. I think that would be going too far. And I don't know how else we could address that issue. I think we just have to let the individual make a decision that may cause them economic harm, but at least may preserve their health and protect their rights to reemployment if they make that decision.